Brothers and sisters, our readings today compel us to reflect upon our relationship with material goods. In the gospel, Jesus is confronted by two siblings who are fighting over an inheritance. And this, of course, isn't the only time that Jesus speaks to a situation where material goods serve to pit brother against brother. We can think back to the story of the prodigal son, where the brothers are pit against each other as rivals, based largely on material wealth. And sadly, this situation is not uncommon in our society today. How often do we hear stories of families and friendships that have been ruined over disputes over material wealth and inheritances? If you just turn on the television in the daytime, you'll be inundated with court television programs where people are suing one another, including family and friends, over material possessions. Because we're so obsessed with our possessions, I think it's important that we explore Jesus' commentary about this dispute. Jesus responds with the rhetorical question, "Friend, who appointed me as your judge and arbitrator?" Now, there's a great irony here because we know that Jesus is, of course, the supreme judge. And he knows it himself. He often alludes to the day when he will come to judge all people. And yet, despite being the supreme judge, he rejects the title of judge in this instance. In doing so, Jesus refuses to contribute to the corruption of the two brothers. Jesus is not Judge Judy. He won't hear about this fight over material goods. For he knows that even if he were to make a ruling in this matter, the central issue would still remain. Namely, the brothers were seeking the wrong thing. They were seeking material wealth and placing an inheritance over their relationship with each other. And Jesus knows that when we take our brother to court, win or lose, we always lose on the level of relationship. So instead of ruling on this matter, Jesus exposes the waywardness of the siblings through the parable of the rich man who found security in his possessions. Like many wealthy people in our day, this man foolishly believed he achieved enough wealth to carry him throughout his existence. And while in fact he did have enough wealth to care for his physical existence, the few hours that remained, Jesus' point is that wealth doesn't matter before God. Hence, in the second reading, St. Paul urges the Colossians to think of what is above, not what is on earth. For as the first reading points out, when it comes to earthly goods, all things are vanity. Friends, I'm sure it comes as no surprise to anyone here that material wealth will be of no value when we leave this world. Yet while none of us is under the impression that our wealth or our worldly accolades will get us into heaven, I still think it's important for us to reflect upon this passage on a regular basis, because we live in a society that's so caught up in materialism that it's easy for us to get caught up in that same mentality. It's so easy for us to spend most of our time worrying about our wealth and trying to acquire enough material wealth. Now, to be clear, material wealth isn't bad in and of itself. In fact, it can be a very good thing. The church insists that people have a right to own property. But when we identify with such goods, we become lost. When we view our self-worth or the self-worth of others based on material wealth or human accolades, we've lost sight of the right path. Let me give you one example where I see this in our world quite frequently. It happens when people will come to me and ask the question, why do good things happen to bad people? You know, why does Johnny have the nice house and the fancy car? He never goes to church. He's mean, he's stingy, and he's rude. And I always go to church. I follow all of God's commandments. And yet I'm the one who's in debt, and my house needs repairs that I can't afford, and I can't seem to find a job that pays a just wage. Implicit in this question is that wealth is an indicator of a person's standing before God. Yet as scandalous as it is to us, wealth has nothing to do with our standing before God. Before men, sure. You know, people are always judging each other by their wealth. You know, turn on the TV and you'll see shows dedicated to those who are wealthy and famous. If you walk through the magazine aisle at the supermarket, you'll see cover after cover depicting wealthy and accomplished people by human standards. And we all know that our society values people based on their wealth and their accomplishments. You know, I mean, after all, there was never a television program dedicated to the lifestyles of the poor and decrepit. Jesus, in issuing this parable, challenged systems of thought that confuse a person's greatness with their wealth. And the church has echoed this. And we need only to look to the saints for examples. The saints come from all walks of life. Some, such as Juan Diego, were poor and uneducated, probably having never received an accolade in his life, not even a participation trophy. Others were royalty, who enjoyed vast wealth. And we can think of King Louis or Margaret of Scotland. Yet the church didn't define them by their financial status. Rather, it was the holiness, their obedience to the will of God, that motivated the church to declare them worthy of imitation. Now here's the point, the transforming power of the gospel. Life on this earth is not an end unto itself. Rather, it's at the service of a greater purpose, namely union with God. And therefore, the primary orientation of our lives isn't geared towards satisfying our earthly whims. The primary orientation of our lives is geared towards union with God. This is where the sacraments become so important. The sacraments stand in stark contrast to our culture that values people based on their wealth. In the sacraments, God's infinite grace is poured out upon all people, regardless of their wealth. The only thing that matters is our disposition to receive it. In baptism, we're claimed for Christ. Through baptism, we declare that our lives are not going to be oriented to the world, but to Christ. We no longer belong to this world. And therefore, it's Christ and not the world that is our primary focus. By turning away from the world, we reject the false ideologies that value people based on wealth or human accolades. Instead, we hold that our value as human beings is based on our relationship to God, in whose image and likeness we are created. In the sacrament of penance, we achieve greater union with God as we seek forgiveness for our sins. In the sacrament of penance, we're reconciled to God, and we renew our commitment to make Him the primary focus of our lives. In the Eucharist, we actually achieve union with God when we take His body into our own bodies. The Eucharist is a participation in that union that we hope to share with God for all of eternity when this world passes away. It's the ultimate treasure from heaven come down to earth. And consequently, we should treat it as such. Now, I recently heard the theologian Scott Hahn comment that if we were handing out bags of cash at Mass, our pews would be full. Yet, we receive in communion something of infinitely greater value than money. And as such, we must treat it that way. Put another way, if we're willing to stand in long lines for the latest iPhone, or to catch a glimpse of Justin Bieber or Ross Lynch, or even the Pope for that matter, how much more should we prioritize Christ and make every effort to become united with Him in the sacrament of the Eucharist? To come to Him who is truly present in the sacrament of the altar. After all, He is the treasure that matters most to God. Brothers and sisters, peace to you and to all who amass treasure important to God.